Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live on the Tex and Rex Show. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from outside the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway. And my co-host is here with me.
This is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral, as always. And you know, Rex, I realized something today. Looking out the windows here, you know, I can actually see the Harris County Republican Party headquarters. It's like the nerve center of the Republican Party, the National Republican Party. And man, just smoke coming out of that thing now. Just smoke and people screaming and tears, you know, people going in with their heads down and everything. How did it come to this? How did this happen? We were so fired up a year ago. Couldn't wait to get rid of Obama. And then somebody started with some BS about how Mitt Romney was the most electable one. Who was the first guy who said that? We got to find that out. Who was the first guy? Because that guy, I think he's at the nerve center of the cancer on the Republican Party.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but I think that guy's from your state. And I think it's interesting that you say that that's the nerve center of the Republican Party, because the question is, which Republican Party? Because if I'm not mistaken, half the Texas delegation to the National Convention walked out after they broke their own rules.
Yep, so, absolutely. We're leading the charge against that rule change. And John Boehner was just like, well, it's in the script that the rule passes, so I'm just going to read the script because I'm an idiot and I don't know actually how to do anything. I'm just happy to be here. I'm John Boehner.
Yeah. I just got out of my tanning bed and now I'm a piece of jerky. I'm going to go ahead and have a good cry. We've got a special guest on the line with us, as always. We've got Chris from the Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. Good evening, Trog. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Oh,
hey,
I need a good laugh. Oh, good, man. Good. I just got out of the 8 games of racquetball, so I'll let you guys roll a little bit until I get my brain back to earth.
Sounds good. Well, you know, Tex, you mentioned that the Republican headquarters is on fire. I mean, what are they running around saying?
Game over, man. It's game over.
You know, I mean,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
you've got a live mic on this place.
I mean, the thing is that, right, these are the morons who literally shoved Mitt Romney down our throats because, as you said, they told us he was the most electable. And now the guy has proven to be an even bigger disaster than conservatives were telling the RNC for a year. And now they're turning around going, oh, we don't understand what's happening. And, of course, the thing that they keep floating is, you know, the liberal media has biased the polls and that Romney's actually winning. Are you buying it?
Yeah, exactly. We'll see, you know, us old war horses. You know, people calling me a young gun, like, well, this is my first rodeo here, you know. You know, back in the Dole campaign, we were trying that one, too. Oh, the polls are so wrong. That, you know, they're oversampling all these Democrats. They'll always oversample the Democrats. Or this isn't a poll of likely voters. It's just voter sentiment, you know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, come on, man. Grow up. I mean, at what point are you just going to face up to the fact that this thing is the freaking Hindenburg and you're still on it And no, the pilot doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, so you're going to hang on and just hope it all goes well, or are you going to jump off and start, you know, trying to pump up the third-party vote, not necessarily because the third party can win, but because you'll do two things. You know, and I know I'm a bit of a heretic on the show with some of my third-party thoughts here, but what I'm trying to do is increase third-party votes because I need to send a signal to a Republican Party leadership that is not listening to the voter and that thinks that conservatives are the biggest problem that the Republican Party has. That these conservatives go in, they cause all this problem, and the media yells at them, and then we lose the support of the American people because the American people listen to exactly what the media tells them all the time, right? And so we got to get rid of these conservatives, and we got to start being more moderate because people want to see Washington work. No, they don't. And this line of thinking, let me tell you something about this line of thinking here and what they're doing. This is our leadership, right? So the leadership doesn't like the party, right? They don't like the people in the party because they think they're too radical. Well, I would submit that this isn't actually our leadership, and we are in a dysfunctional relationship with this supposed Republican Party leadership because they have been pursuing this moderate line for, oh, long about 20 years at least, okay? Ever since Reagan, well, we got to go moderate now. We got to go moderate. We got to moderate. That's why they didn't like Gingrich, because Gingrich wasn't about moderating. They want to go back to the Republican Party of the 50s and be all moderate and all this kind of stuff, right? Well, let me tell you, there is no market for that brand, okay? So I don't know what kind of pie charts and diagrams you guys are looking at up there in headquarters or where your graphs are going, you know, but there's no market for a diet Democrat party or the Democrat light party. Because no one's saying, you know, I like the Democrats and I like these policies and I certainly want to support them, but I just wish they wouldn't go so fast with them. If only there was something that was like the Democrat Party but was like in slow gear, I could get on board with that. See, there is no market for that. There just isn't. And as a result, you see the Republican Party has gone from 31% support in the 90s down to 24% support, right? Meanwhile, the Independent Party support has gone from 21 to 38. There is a market.
They keep telling me that happens because people are leaving the Republican Party because it's too conservative. That's what I keep hearing.
Well, exactly. But see, the interesting thing is the Democrat Party had 31% support in back in the 90s, and now they have 32% support. So it's not like they're run into the Democrat Party. They're just not leaving the Democrat Party. So where are they going? They're going independent. Why are they going independent? A brilliant political mind such as Karl Rove cannot even crack this conundrum because Karl Rove thinks all this 40% or 38%, but we'll round up, 40% of independents have gone to the center, somewhere between the rhinos and the Democrats. There's a position so moderate, so smooth and velvety and it's like you're putting a puppy's head because it's so non-conflicting. It's so much in agreement. This is where we need to go. This is the political G-spot that Karl Rove is forever searching for on his own body, perhaps with the help of others, touching and feeling to see if he could find this political G-spot. Well, it doesn't exist, idiot. It's not there because you know what? Everyone's to the right, and you guys look like a bunch of saps and idiots.
That's why
people leave the party. People want leadership. If you're going to be the leader, provide leadership. But you're not providing leadership. You're providing appeasement. Neville Chamberlain, Karl Rove.
Very colorful metaphor. I don't know that I actually want to think about Karl Rove touching himself. But I got your point. And sorry, that image, image out of my head.
I just
see Karl Rove there naked with one of his whiteboards going, here's the G-spot.
I was trying to avoid saying that this is all political masturbation on behalf of Karl Rove's part, but so I just gave the image, I guess, instead. But you know, the image is perhaps more disturbing than saying the actual.
It will
words.
Never
it
leave my mind. You've ruined me for life.
Well, what's really disturbing though is that it's an accurate analogy because the simple fact is that. This delusion that people left the party because they wanted to move to the left is insane. And,
it is insane.
You know, all the polls where they don't ask about party, but they ask about what you identify with. You know, the liberals, which are a small percentage, hardly ever change.
the conservatives seem to be growing, and they're leaving the Republicans. So clearly, you know, and the media is trying to massage this because they use the word independent and the word moderate interchangeably.
Right.
Moderate and independent interchangeably. Well, an independent is just simply someone who said, I'm not going to join the two big clubs in town because I'm an independent thinker. Now, you could be an independent thinker as a socialist who doesn't, even though that's an oxymoron, who doesn't think that the Democrats are socialist enough, so therefore you want to join the Socialist Party. So you would clearly not be a moderate. You would be an extreme liberal. But most of us identify as independents because we are actually conservative. We actually believe in the Constitution. We see the validity of having parties in order to organize political efforts to keep the conservative principles alive. But when your own house turns against you and you try to fight for it and they cheat and beat you and shit on you and piss on you, do you want to go back there and fix it, or do you want to burn it down and go to another one? I'm not advocating
either
position.
Clearly, we're using different restrooms.
I'm not advocating either position. I'm simply saying that, you know, if you believe that the Republican Party can be reformed as the party of Reagan and Gingrich, then that's what you should do. But if you want to affect that change, you've got to send them, like Tex said, a clear and resounding signal that guys like Karl Rove have to stop picking ever more, quote, moderate or liberal candidates to run, because then you're not fixing it. You're just participating in something that's becoming worse. So maybe you're, this election cycle, a refugee from your own party, and you're going to vote for a more conservative candidate with the intention of going back home to fix your own country. Or perhaps you decided, you know what, I've tried to fix them many times, so I'm not going to be a refugee this election. I'm going to emigrate to another party that is truly conservative. And that's the choice you have to make. Go ahead, Dex.
I was going to say, you know, perhaps it's time for a little audience participation, because today I got a little gem in the mail, which is the 2012 Presidential Platform Survey from the Republican Party, where they want me to write in and tell them my thoughts on various things, and then, of course, send them money after the way they treated people at Tampa. I mean, I paid my own money to go to Tampa. Other people paid their own money to go to Tampa. Texas, our delegation said objection, and now the party apparently is interested in receiving money from Texas, just not our vote or our support, and they don't really want to hear us. So shut the hell up, Texas. So it's signed by Reince Priebus. Wow!
Ooh, that's special. You should order it. You should frame that.
Handwritten.
Yeah, you should frame it.
What did you do to my hot tub? But I think the audience should call in and give us some thoughts on how best to respond to this organization when they say that they want to hear from us. But whatever shall we say to them?
Fair enough, Tex. I like that. Let's open that up. A few ground rules. Number is 646-649-1013. Repeat, 646-649-1013. Tex and Rex is not a family show, so, you know, you're apt to hear language that's more appropriate for a Marine barracks than, you know, your
imagery
drive. Yeah, or odd imagery. So we don't have too many rules. One thing that you will be excluded for as soon as you open your mouth is you're not allowed to blaspheme on these airwaves, so do not use GD. Other than that, if colorful metaphors come out of your mouth because you're in an impassioned moment, we're not FCC regulated, so we're cool with it. And we welcome opposition. And when I say opposition, obviously the number one opposition would be, are you actually an Obama supporter? Did you vote for him in 08, and are you actually crazy enough to vote for the guy again this time? Please call in. We'd like to understand how your brain works or doesn't.
Or if you're a Romney supporter, if you could call in and explain exactly why you're a Romney supporter without using the word Obama, and if you can provide some specifics around that rather than some penumbra of Mitt Romney that you have projected onto him on the basis of no data, we certainly would be willing to hear you out because, you know, I'm just mystified by the guy. I don't know. He's just a walking around empty suit, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tex. And here's the interesting thing. I don't begrudge anybody who, out of personal conviction, wants to vote for Obama or Mitt Romney. I don't understand it, but, you know, it's their vote. They can do with it what they like. I have some fundamental problems with a few things. Number one, Article 2 of the Constitution clearly says that Obama is not eligible for the office, and it's dubious if Mitt Romney is. So, you know, on those two grounds, I've got some problems. But other than that, if you happen to ideologically be lined up with either of these monkeys, and frankly, I don't know which one you'd be more aligned with because I can't tell the difference, but your vote is your own, and you can vote for whomever you want. And on the Tex and Rex show, we're not telling you for whom to vote. We are simply telling you that if you are truly a conservative, meaning that you intend in your political life, which every one of us has, by the way, whether you like it or not, if you intend to conserve a liberal document, and that document is the Constitution for these United States, then I want to know how you formulate your decision for whom to vote, and we want to give you the options of who can actually help you support the U.S. Constitution because it is the supreme law of the land. Now, the interesting thing is we are being attacked as former Gingrich supporters. Often we get attacked from the –
Well, still a Gingrich supporter. I just don't have an opportunity right now to support him. But
right. Thanks for the clarification. Yes, we are still Gingrich supporters. However, right now Gingrich is not effectively in the race, and therefore there's no opportunity to support him at this moment. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. We've been attacked from the constitutionalists, predominantly the Ron Paul camp, for being Gingrich supporters because clearly they perceive Gingrich to be one of the statist globalist guys, which – I have seen no evidence of other than a few dubious.
He's established, according to them, even though the establishment can't friggin' stand Gingrich, even when he was Speaker and fixing the nation.
Yeah, which I find interesting because Ron Paul was as much establishment as Newt Gingrich, just not Speaker of the House. So, you know, the interesting thing is that there are some dubious votes that Newt had back in the 90s, which I don't agree with. But overall, the man moved the government towards the Constitution, not away from it. But predominantly, the attacks have come significantly more recently from former Newt Gingrich supporters who have somehow become Romney supporters. And if any of you are out there, I would love to hear from you because I still haven't quite understood the logic behind that decision. Again, the number is 646-649-1013. The interesting thing is that if Romney is your vote against Obama, that's your rationale, which, Tex, I'm sure you've heard people say that, you know, they're not voting for Romney. He wasn't their first pick, their second pick, their fifth pick.
He must be better than Obama. And if you can get enough emotion into the word Obama, it makes that vote for Mitt Romney ever so more important.
Yeah. So if you are voting for Romney to vote against Obama, I would love for someone to explain to me precisely where Romney is actually against Obama. And perhaps we'll get the opportunity to see this in the debate. Is it tomorrow night or Wednesday night? Whenever it is. Wednesday night.
Yeah,
maybe we'll see that. I mean, maybe at least rhetorically, although I think it'll be humorous given the fact that
it's going to be a debate. Or it's just going to be two people talking near each other is actually what's going to be going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm calling it a debate for rhetorical reasons. Clearly it's not a debate, because if it was a debate, then those two monkeys would actually have the other candidates who have enough ballot access to acquire 270 electoral votes on the stage with them. I mean, why is it that they're afraid to debate Gary Johnson or Virgil Goode, or even for that matter Jill Stein, all of whom have enough ballot access to attain 270 electoral votes? Why won't these guys debate them? Why in a democratic republic are we silencing the voice of the opposition or silencing dissent? Can you?
Because when the two-party system is in more danger than it's ever been, then they more than ever have to lock the doors against anybody thinking or understanding that there are other choices and alternatives. These two organizations, the Democrat and the Republican Party, are hand in glove, basically now the same organization. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people in those parties and some elected officials in those parties who don't have diametrically opposed views, but the leadership of both parties and the Washington establishment of both parties are hand in glove the same group of people. And whenever new people come in and they try to change things, the establishment shuts those people down and tries to get them out of town because they're causing problems with basically the theft of your money. Actually, you know, something interesting. We're on QE3 now, which is QE infinity at this point. And during this time, we did the QE3, or, well, we did the QEs. We started them to help out the failing bank industry, which started to collapse because they had accumulated a large mass of bogus BS home loans, right? Mostly foisted on us by a program that started under Jimmy Carter, then was expanded under Reagan, and then under Bush, Samuel Bodman, who was then Secretary of the Treasury, was trying to reform this program, the CIRA, the Community Investment Reinvigoration, whatever, Act. You know, who cares? Anyway, so basically what it said is you've got to give loans to, you know, low-income and minority housing. Low-income is code for minority housing, right, in Democratic parlance. You know, the interesting thing is Democrats always accuse Republicans of speaking in a code, but yet if you ever notice, the Democrats are the ones who have the code, right? Anyway, so low-income is their code word for minority housing, not that it really matters, but, you know, whatever. So they started giving a bunch of loans to people who couldn't afford to pay these loans. And as a result, they accumulated a lot of bad paper. So what they did is the old Michael Milken strategy, which is the junk bond strategy, which is that a junk bond has about an 80, 90% chance that it'll never pay you any money. But if you have a portfolio filled with them, the amount of money that you will make on the 1 in 20 or whatever that is actually going to make it is so much more than the amount that you lose on the ones that lost that it actually is a winning portfolio. And so Michael Milken actually worked for an investment house. I forget exactly which one at the time. But he was making money hand over fist. And people were attacking his strategy within the firm. And they were like, yeah, but you don't make the kind of money he does. Okay, so go forward to what they did with the housing loans. So you got a bunch of bad loans that aren't really performing all that well. So what they did is they bundled them up with good loans. And then every loan package became like an Easter egg. Yeah, these are crap, but some of them will pay off, and the amount of money you'll make more than cover than the amount of loss, right? Okay, well, maybe, you know, but unfortunately in this case wasn't true. You know, they started stuffing more and more bad loans in, and, you know, I freaking know some people who made money doing this type of thing. I don't know them personally, but I met them. And they, you know, basically they created all these home loans and all this kind of stuff. They loaned the money to anybody, and then they immediately turned it around, and they sold it to, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who bought them, you know. And that essentially is what happened. So the idea is we're going to fix this by doing these quantitative expansions, right, which is the printing of the money. Well, actually, it's not really printing money. It's the borrowing of the money. We're going to borrow our way out. And so to help out this ailing industry, they borrowed they loaned out $1.4 billion to people who had, you know, home loan problems, all this kind of stuff, home loan relief or whatever. But, yes, $4.7 trillion went to New York, to Wall Street, right? So $1.4 billion was to fix that little fire they started, right? See, this is what they tell you in Washington. In D.C., they say we start the fires and we sell them the water. So they started the fire with the CIRA and loan money to people who can't possibly pay you back. And then, now that there's a fire and the banking system's falling down, they sell you the water by giving you $1.4 billion to fix that housing problem, $4.7 trillion to go bail out Wall Street. I mean, at what point are you just like, this is total BS? Let me say something else. They did this in Argentina as well. And Argentina, what they did is all the leadership of the country got on helicopters and they just flew away as the economy disintegrated into inflation. So there's a little something you got to look forward to. Maybe John Boehner will get a helicopter with Mitt Romney and they'll all just go away, and Barack Obama and all those other guys, and leave you with the bill.
See, now that's an image, except for the leaving me with the bill part.
that I can actually get behind. I would love for them to go get in a helicopter and go away. That'd be fantastic. But, yeah, Tex, you're absolutely right. I mean, the fact is that what they're doing is unconscionable. And unless you, the listener, you, the voter, understand this mechanism, you will not make the right decision, meaning that we tend to ascribe to the president this magical ability to manage the money supply. Well, presidents, A, don't have that authority by the Constitution. And when Congress illegally abdicated that authority to the private Federal Reserve Bank, they ensured that the president does not have that authority even now. So we tend to blame Obama, and so we'll fire him and replace him with Romney, who will do the same thing because he has no control over it. However, both Obama and Romney happen to like this ridiculous quantitative easing mechanism. But the fact is that all these decisions are made by the owners of the Federal Reserve, and primarily the New York branch of the Federal Reserve. And then they kind of tell the chairman, who was appointed by the president, what to say and do to obfuscate what their actual intentions are. So it's really not Bernanke who's making these decisions. He's kind of the administrator for the New York Fed and whoever is running that show. And the interesting thing is people say, well, but, you know, there is federal oversight because the Board of Governors and the chairman of the board are appointed by the president. Sure they are. But what happens is the banks, who are allegedly under the Federal Reserve system, submit the names of who the president can select from. So, you know,
and
they give him like 5 days.
They finance the candidate's campaign. He's kind of in a difficult situation to say, hey, thank you for that $1 billion you put into my presidential campaign, but I'll be picking my own, you know, people to run the bank. Thank you very much. No, that doesn't happen ever.
No, it does. Well, it doesn't happen ever for two reasons. One, what you just said, they've already greased the wheel, so he's not in a position to say that. And two, he has no authority to do that. He can only pick from the list that they give him. So, for example, Mitt Romney, the severe conservative, cannot go into the White House and on January 21st appoint Ron Paul as the chairman of the Federal Reserve, because Ron Paul was not named as one of the options by the Federal Reserve. So this fantasy that some people have that Mitt Romney will actually, you know, because he's a Republican, he'll be surrounded by Republicans, even though he might himself be a liberal and not my first choice, is going to have a position for Newt Gingrich and for Ron Paul and for Alan West. And it's going to be this wonderful group of conservatives that are around him that are going to hold his feet to the fire.
Well, I have a question, Rex.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to mess you up. But this is the same group of conservatives that they wouldn't let speak at the convention that are going to be on his admin?
Yeah, apparently, including Sarah Palin, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, that's the theory. That's what I'm hearing. And I
keep
think
drinking
that
Kool-Aid.
I think what's happening here, Chris, is some people are so twisted, feel so helpless, and feel somewhat guilty about their decision that they've gone ahead and said, well, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for this guy, that they have to find some rationale to make them feel good about it. And let me tell you something. If you want to feel good,
go ahead.
No, Chris,
no,
please.
I just wanted to read you. I just got a note from somebody that, you know, they're bad-mouthing me and our group again in a group. And I'm a nice guy, but I'm misguided because I'm talking about third parties. And it's our fault that Sammy – no, listen. It's our fault that Sammy's talking about third parties. We manipulated him. Okay, so here's my response.
I guess
so-and-so is bad-mouthing us again. We are misguided because we are talking about third parties. Let me repeat this number. 40%+ of voters in this country are independents and third parties. The GOP is nearing 20%. So I'm in the 40% category. Who's confused?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
People who like numbers.
We'll come back and revisit that topic because I got a few thoughts on that one too. But on the Federal Reserve issue, just want to let you guys know that Ben Bernanke, by the way, was in Washington. Well, of course, he's always in Washington, but he was talking before Congress today, and Ben Bernanke cautioned Congress. This is from the press. This is CBS in D.C. So the chairman cautioned Congress against adopting a law that would allow it to review the Fed's interest rate policy discussion.
Huh.
Bernanke
well,
warned
fantastic.
That such a step would improperly inject political pressure into the Fed's private deliberations and affect the officials' decisions. The Fed knows best, Congress. You shouldn't be poking your nose into things that don't belong to you. Don't we pick the Congress? Do we not? We don't pick the people on the Fed. Who's picking these people? The Fed comes up with a list of people to pick. It's an undemocratic, unelected body that is beholden only to itself. And don't you, Congress, go nosing into what we're doing. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about that one. Got a lot of suspicion going on.
Tex, that's the very definition of corporatism. And for those who aren't familiar with it, get familiar with it, because you live in a corporatist society. It means that those with financial interests in corporations who want to dominate the market, not through fair competition against those who would like to dislodge them and outcompete them for customers, but by dominating the market through coercive measures. Similar to, say, the Al Capone Corporation or the the Scarface Corporation from the movie with Al Pacino. You know me, I'm the bag man, okay? That kind of thing. It's the same kind of mentality. But instead of doing it with guns in the streets and coming into your store and breaking things up and saying, hey, we won't be back next week to break it up if you give us 10% of your take, okay? They do it through the government, and this is corporatism. So you have basically government and corporations in collusion against the people. Now, here's the thing. It's very interesting. This is not a new idea. This is an idea that the founding fathers were so acutely aware of, given that this type of mentality took hold in mercantilist Great Britain, where they had just fought a war of independence from. So they decided that they would vest the power to coin money in Congress, meaning predominantly, since revenue bills and that sort of thing are the responsibility of the House, it's in the people's House, the representatives who are closest to the people. Now, that was done for a very specific reason, because when these people do the things they're doing, like Ben Bernanke telling Congress, butt out of our affairs, we need to do this privately, is basically telling you, because that's your representative in Congress, is telling you, hey, listen, butt out. We'll handle the money with which you feed your children, the money with which you run your business, the money with which you collect your paycheck, we're going to manage it, and you don't need to know a damn thing about it. Now, that is just ridiculous. That's the very definition of tyranny, and that is exactly what they're doing. And unless we stop it, because they're getting to the point where they can't handle it anymore, it's going to be something else.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man.
Yeah, because they've extended it beyond what is comprehensible or manageable. And let me tell you something. When the head of the central bank, or the figurehead of the central bank, comes out and starts telling you that he won't be easing, that he won't be monetizing the debt, that there won't be any inflation, that they know what they are doing, then you know that the opposite is about to happen. Because the only job Ben Bernanke has is to obfuscate, to lie, to confuse, and to misdirect. Ben Bernanke is as much of a magician as Glenn Beck, and both of them are confusing you with a minor amount of truth and a large amount of what is commonly referred to in most of the country as bullshit, although where my co-host comes from is referred to as horseshit. To you, Tex.
Absolutely. That is the truth. And so, you know, this is the problem. We have a political system that's beholden to the bank system. You know, I mean, the founding fathers were concerned about this. Now, you know, Barack Obama has said that, you know, the Constitution is a bill of negative rights. Well, yeah, negative rights for government, because it's supposed to be keeping the government out of your life, because governments are inherently corrupt and they increase power over time and eventually encroach upon your own liberty. And so the people need to be protected from the encroachment of government power. But one thing the Founding Fathers did not conceive of was something like the Federal Reserve System, and there is no way in hell they would have supported it. And so to the extent that I would say there are flaws in the Constitution, the only flaws are flaws of omission, which had granted way too much power to the federal government to control the money supply and decide what to do with it. But, you know, so now we have these political candidates, and we have this kabuki theater, as if you have a choice between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney when you have no choice because their policies are exactly the same, and now they're prepping up for the debate. So, you know, they're, you know, putting that little mouth guard in, they're getting the game faces in, they're in their corners, you know, they're going to come bare-knuckled out and, you know, barreling and having a fight. And so, you know, what's Mitt Romney doing ahead of time, right? Okay, so looked into this, you know, Barack Obama, he's bobbing and weaving with that 47% comment, you know. And then Mitt Romney, he's coming at him with foreign policy. So Mitt Romney said this little gem here. Okay, so amid this upheaval, our country seems to be at the mercy of events rather than shaping them. Well, I would agree with that. We are not moving them in a direction that protects our people or our allies. Well, I would agree with that. And so what are we going to do about it, Mr. Romney? What is your policy? How do we fix it? And he concludes, and that's dangerous. Oh, really? Really? I didn't know that. I didn't putting us at the mercy of events rather than shaping them and not moving in a direction to protect our people and our allies is dangerous, in fact, folks. Yes. Turns out, many of you might have supported them. Turns out it's dangerous. I mean,
did people buy this stuff, Tex? I mean, this actually moves people to vote?
I've got to get people that around me. He knows. He knows his face.
Are we that messed up
language.
In this country? Oh, my God. Has he ever stood on a stage anywhere in this primary in general election that you guys know of and actually laid out a plan and a vision for this country?
Yeah.
Have you guys?
I think he did. I think he did a pretty clear-cut job of the vision for this country. He laid out a vision that goes something like this. Hey, remember me? I'm the moron that lost to the other moron that lost to Barack Obama, that other moron. And I'm here on this stage with these seven or eight other people, including Governor Gary Johnson, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain, Rick Perry, Ricky Santorum, Doctors Gingrich and Paul. And he laid out a plan that, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to raise so much money and I'm going to blast the shit out of all of these people that they will be left in the dust. And if any of them manage to survive, especially those two insidious bastards, Gingrich and Paul, we're going to lie, steal, and cheat at the convention in order to eviscerate them and not even give them an opportunity. Because I am here to lose to Barack Obama, and the only time I'm going to stand up and fight is when I'm fighting conservatives. And then when it comes time for me to go against Barack Obama, I'm going to treat him with dainty little pink kid gloves. That's the plan he laid out. Because if that's not the plan
that's
he laid out, that's the one he followed.
And if you don't like Obamacare, Mitt Romney built that. So, ouch. Yeah, go vote for that guy because he's really going to shake things up.
Well,
has been in the can from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, Ross Perot was talking today, and he's saying, look, things can't go on like this, you know. Our country's in serious trouble. I mean, if only we had all had the sense to vote Perot back then. But the thing was, the two-party system didn't seem to be failing us, even though Ross Perot had a bajillion charts and graphs like, you know, you're screwed, you're going over the cliff, what are you doing? You know, but people, they're beholden to that elephant and that donkey, you know, that's just the end, you know?
And
so.
And Tex, I remember that. I remember that, okay, because I was, well, we're talking about 1992, right? This was my first presidential election. I was a Reaganite. Reagan actually came to my high school in my sophomore year, and he gave a wonderful speech about education in America. And it was just amazing for me at that young age to just be standing 30 feet from President Ronald Reagan. And he delivered this speech, and he took questions, and it was just fantastic. And I thought, man, this man knows what he's talking about. This guy inspires. This guy's got it right on, and he's telling me that I am privileged to be a citizen in a state that is in a confederation that is the greatest nation that the world has ever seen in history. This is awesome. And then, of course, you know, I know he can't be reelected, but his vice president, and remember, you know, looking back at the 1980 primary, the whole voodoo economics and all that stuff, well, I didn't pay attention to that. I was just way too young. So here I am thinking, well, the vice president is probably going to be, you know, just like the guy that was there before. Otherwise, why would they be a team? And George H.W. Bush ran as a Reaganite. And I thought, wow, that's exciting. We can win with this guy. But then he got in office. And what did he do? First he said, read my lips, no new taxes. And Tex, how does that
translate? Eat my shorts.
Eat my shorts, here's some taxes, right? So when I saw that, I thought, what the hell just happened? Now let's keep in mind something. And this is what people sometimes fail to understand. I was making a little bit of money, you know. I was making $3 an hour. I was pretty excited, okay? But I wasn't paying a hell of a lot of tax. I mean, I was paying my FICA and all that, you know, kind of stuff. But it wasn't terrible, and I had a lot more cash in my pocket then than I do now. But I anticipated making more money in the future, and if taxes were going up, I anticipated that a larger amount of my future earnings would be confiscated. So this myth, Mr. Romney, that 47% don't give a crap, that's not true, because some people are on the take and they want to use the government to plunder others. But many of us aspire to more, or at least aspire that our children will have more, and but we will not vote for policies that will destroy that opportunity. So I think you better wake up, pal, because you don't know what's going on. But he did that, and he was governing as basically a kind of a neoliberal as opposed to a Reagan conservative. Now, of course, he had the whole, you know, boost from the first Iraq war, okay, which I found kind of, you know, I mean, I was very excited about it because we won, and it was exciting and patriotic, and you wore your flag and all that kind of stuff. But what I found interesting is, why did the United States of America send 500,000 troops to liberate a tiny Arab kingdom that's a Muslim kingdom when it was taken over by a secular Arab government that does have some legitimate claims to that land? Why are we doing that? Why did we do that? Why didn't the Kuwaitis defend themselves? Hey, why didn't the Saudis help out the Kuwaitis? Why do we have to do it? So in any event, I realized that, look, this guy, he's not a Reagan conservative. So come time to reelect him, I'm thinking, I don't want to vote for this guy. Here comes this other guy, right? Slick Willie. I'm like, well, definitely not voting for that guy. I can't trust that guy. That guy looks shady. So what are my options? Oh, well, look.
You don't like corrupt Southern governors? Nine out of ten Northeastern liberals love corrupt Southern governors, it turns out.
It's an amazing statistic. but here's this guy, right? H. Ross Perot, right? Now, he may not be the most charismatic figure. I mean, he certainly was no Ronald Reagan. But he had these charts, and he was saying stuff, and I'm going, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. He's right about that. Absolutely, right? This guy's fantastic. Who is this guy? Come to find out, H. Ross Perot was the number one salesman for Xerox. He established his own company, EDS, became a billionaire. And when we had the hostage crisis, turns out that he had people in Iran. And while Jimmy Carter was dithering around with his thumb up his ass, hamstringing our military so that they had an absolute disaster trying to free the hostages, Perot just hired some mercenaries and got them into Tehran and got his people out. Whoa, this guy gets shit done. And he's talking about this cliff that we're about to fall off and this giant sucking sound that's going to suck all our jobs to Mexico. Nothing against the Mexicans. They're fine people, and I wish them success, but not at my expense. And so I wanted to vote for this guy. But then the pressure came on. Oh, well, you know, if you vote for Ross Perot, you're throwing your vote away. If you vote third party, you're helping elect the liberal Democrat. You're actually voting against the Republicans and the conservatives. That's the kind of stuff that kept on coming at me. Sound familiar to you?
Absolutely. And it goes on to this day. But you know what, Rex, the moral of the story, where was the Republican Party back then? 30-plus support, right? Where are they today? 20-plus. Because
wow.
That doesn't work. You can call me all you want. You can call me all the names in the book you want. You're part of a failing organization, and that organization is failing because you're aiding and abetting it by continuing to support it when it doesn't support what you believe. And let's be honest, when it's openly contemptuous of what you believe. You read the press, all that stuff that's out there, you hear the leadership, and they're saying, oh, these conservatives are too radical, that's not where the country is and everything. You're hearing this from an organization that has lost a third of its support just in recent years, you know, in the past few election cycles. A third of its support is going away, and it's telling you that people don't need conservatives. Well, apparently they've been saying it so often that now they no longer actually have conservatives because conservatives are now independent. So thank you, Karl Rove, for chasing the conservatives out of your party. And remember when George Bush was talking about the base, and you remember, you know, Karl Rove is like, this is a get-out-your-base election, because it's always a get-out-your-base election. It's a get-out-your-base election while you run a rhino, right? Well, after a while, you don't have any base, right? Because you've killed your own base because you keep running people who don't believe what the base believes. And, but you keep saying, oh, but the alternative is so bad, you got to turn out and you got to vote for this guy. You got to compromise on your principles, you Republicans or you conservatives out there. People believing in the Constitution. Old fogies, idiots.
Yeah.
Get with the program.
Yeah. Constitution. That's a 225-year-old document. It's completely outdated. It's not even written in the English we use today. They thought the letter F was an S. Crazy bastards. Yeah, it's interesting. So, Tex, what you're basically saying is that Karl Rove blew out the speakers? I mean, he blew out the base?
Yeah, he blew out the base. He did. And where'd they go? They've all gone third party. You know, they're all independents. Now, they will dodge and weave and go into either the Republican or the Democrat Party in order to support one or two or the other of them. But let me tell you, if people are not stating that they identify with your party, just because they don't like you, but they haven't figured out what their alternative is. But you know what? You've now pushed that up to 40%. You know, Bill Clinton won the presidency with 43.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Bill Clinton actually never got a majority of the vote. I think he won the second time with 48, right?
Yep,
so
correct.
We got 40%, basically. We got 40% of the country is independent now. At what point are we not the dominant voice? I mean, the independent is 40%. The Republican Party is 20%. Why are we still talking to these guys?
Yeah.
They're the Nike of the right. You know, well, let me tell you, those shoes got a lot of athlete's foot in them these days, and I think the rats are gnawing on them at night.
Yeah. They're like rinse pubis, that little rat. He gnaws on Nikes at night. Look, here's the amazing thing. What you just said, right, you know, that basically the numbers indicate that, what is it, you said it went from 30 to 20. So a third of your party, a third of your loyalists have disappeared because of your behavior in the last few election cycles. And then here comes this brand new, energized, excited, constitutionalist, motivated, grassroots movement coming to the party, mostly youth.
And fresh blood.
Fresh blood, growth, future growth. Maybe you can recapture some of that third that you lost. Maybe you can become bigger. Maybe you can actually become the dominant party. Maybe some of these young college Ron Paul Republicans might actually talk to their Occupy Wall Street moron friends and maybe convert some of them. You know, who knows where it would go. So what is your response, Mr. Boehner, Mr. Priebus, Mr. Crypt Keeper Sununu? What did you do to them?
They told them to go to hell, and then they took the bus home.
Okay. So if you're trying to grow your organization that's already bled out by a third, and here comes new blood that actually agrees with the principles which you allege to believe in, and you throw them away, that tells me one of two things, maybe three. One, you don't actually believe those things. You just put them on your platform, but you don't give a shit about the Constitution.
Right.
You're not really pro-life. You don't believe in limited government. You don't believe in lower or no taxes. You don't believe in a sound money. You don't believe in state sovereignty or even sovereignty for the United States. So that makes you a bunch of hypocrites and liars, and why would I support you? Or two, you are grossly incompetent, meaning that you don't know how to run the party of Reagan and Gingrich other than into the ground, in which case you need to go because you're not suitable for the job, or three, you're intending to hand power to the party that has the lowest constituency in the country
because very few people outside of Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York are actually liberals, and so maybe you've set up this controlled opposition in order to give legitimacy, credence, and power to this party that would otherwise only belong in Soviet Russia. Do you see a third option, a fourth option, gentlemen? I don't see a fourth option.
No,
move
I,
to Costa Rica.
Well, you know, Rex, I just want to mention something about the platform, right? What is this thing for? I mean, I guess political parties have to have a platform to say these things we believe, but, I mean, anybody reading this thing anymore has, I mean, who's read this thing, right? I mean, they talk about it as if it exists. I guess it's online somewhere. You could read it. But, you know, I don't think the average voter's reading this thing, but people, they're furious over the platform and this sentence and that sentence and what it says. Mitt Romney basically just bought off the Republican Party. What do you think the chances are once he's got the nomination, and if he were to get elected president, which, I mean, come on, that's never going to happen. But, you know, he'd be like, oh, now that I basically bought off the party over the last 4 years, let me brush off this platform, find out what I believe in and what I need to do. That doesn't happen. You got a Congress that doesn't even care about the Constitution. You think they're reading these party platforms? What's the Democrat Party platform say? God only knows. Oh, well, you know, they added that one back, you know. But, you know, I mean, sometimes it could be embarrassing. But for the most part, who knows what that platform says? And really, those elected officials, you think they're like, well, you know, the platform says that we need to do that. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's going on at all.
Well, the platform is not a legally binding document. It's just a principle. It's like a vision statement. Like, this is what we're about.
Those platforms actually are a living, breathing document. They change all the time. Every time. Yep. I mean, we change ours here in Texas. There's a whole vote, and people are adding commas here and all this crap and fixing it. I have found a typo. Oh, boy, freaking Sherlock Holmes over here. This guy, he's drawing a bead on a typo. They were there till like 3 in the morning. I got up, I left. It's like, I don't care. You know, fix your own freaking typos, you know? I'm not getting paid for this. I'm out of here.
But, you know, the fact that the platform is a living, breathing document is actually a good thing because it is supposed to address the principles of the organization, and it is also supposed to address the specifics of the day. So that makes sense. But it is also supposed to comport with the non-living, breathing document, the dead document, the one that was written in 1787, I think ratified in 1789, and that cannot be changed other than by legitimate process outlined in Article 5 of the Constitution. If your party platform does not comport with the Constitution, it is invalid because you're a political party in these United States. And number two, if you flout your platform and the Constitution, then are you not in fact an illegitimate party?
You're a lawless organization.
And if you cheat, breaking your own rules, breaking the rules of fair play that have been common to mankind in all cultures and all places throughout history, and you actually break the federal law of the very government that you are electing office people to office for, are you not completely invalidating yourself?
Well, Rex, I see the chat filling up, and so, you know, when we first started, you know, we are starting now an hour early, so people are probably tuning in for our old time slot, but...
Sure.
Which I believe we're going back to next week, but anyway.
Yeah, let me take a break here, and then you finish your point. Tex and Rex have responsibilities outside of being a couple of brown coats with a big microphone. So you know, sometimes other things get in the way. So we're trying to find a time where we can broadcast consistently. It looks like it will be Monday and Tuesday throughout October and beyond. But likely not from 7 to 9. We might actually be going 8 to 10, which would actually have us overlap for about an hour with Bard's Logic political talk. But the beautiful thing about Blog Talk Radio is you can always listen to the archives and catch up on whichever show you didn't listen to live. And so that is likely to be our new time. But, you know, we'll let you know as soon as we figure that out in committee meeting and put the commas in the right places and vote on it and then have an objection and then, you know, re-vote again. So once we do that, we'll let you know. Back to you, Tex.
Yeah, so I was just going to say that when we started off, I was letting everyone know that I received in the mail, and so many of you may be receiving the mail here very soon, the 2012 Presidential Platform Survey straight from Reince Priebus, And Reince wants to hear from me. He has questions about his hot tub and what I may or may not have done to it, and cigars that may or may not be missing. But also,
did you leave him, a Babe Ruth?
I will not disclose over the airwaves. My lawyer has advised me to plead the fifth. But they actually are asking about the platform, so I guess they care about this thing. They don't care when the Texas State delegation jumps up and yells objection to their objectionable rule, but now they want to hear from me, of all people. So I guess that's interesting. So it says, please place any additional comments here. So, you know, if callers want to call in, what do you think we should say to Reince Priebus and the gang about how the Republican Party is doing this year with our most electable candidate?
That's a wonderful and generous offer you've made to the listeners, Tex, and I assume that you're asking for people who actually think that the Republican Party platform has some validity. Perhaps you're asking for others. So I'll open up the mics. Just call in 646-649-1013. Repeat, 646-649-1013. So tell us about this magical form you got from little Reince Priebus.
Well, you know, it's just the same kind of fundraising crap. And they like, hey, if you have any additional comments here, you know, please help us. How are we doing, right? And so they got like three lines you could write on here, you know, which is enough to write fuck off, I think. but, you know, I guess they like it short and sweet that way. But, you know, maybe I could persuade a fool over there. Someone's got to read this thing. But you know what I did? I just wrote on the check because I stapled a check, right, for $0. I was like, well, they're not going to read. You know, I stapled a letter once. I'm like, what are they freaking, they got time over there? Are they going to read this crap? I mean, I used to have to open the mail for people, you know, in Congress and stuff like that, and they don't care. I mean, because they don't even open it. Like Reince Priebus is over there. Hey, the mail came in today. I wonder what's in there today, you know. Some freaking teenager, you know, opening the mail. You think he's going to read your screed? Only if it's like insanely crazy. We actually, when I was doing this stuff, we would keep the crazy one. We'd keep them around and we'd like read them all the time. So, you know, you can try to be like smart and intelligent. And actually, there's a way that some of those actually do get through to people. So you can try that. But also you could like write this incredibly insane one and it'll get like hung up on a wall somewhere and they'll pass it buy it today as they'll do something. But anyway, so I wrote my stuff on a check because I figure what they're looking for is the check. So if they get the check and it's got all this stuff written on it, then I'm like, what's going on? I can't cash this. So, you know, I thought that was a successful way to go.
Well, it's successful on many fronts. One, it does make a principled statement, although in a colorful manner, which might get more attention. But it is a principled statement because if you have been a Republican and you believe in what the Republicans stand for when they act like Ronald Reagan and Newt Gingrich, then it is incumbent upon you to let them know where they have strayed. But number two, it just makes you feel good. It just makes you feel good. And here's the thing about feeling good about what you do. You only feel good about it if it's a good thing. And that's why people don't feel good about voting for the lesser of two evils. In fact, voting for the lesser of two evils all these years is what has brought us precisely to the point now where we have criminal government and an apathetic voter, you know, voters in this country who are basically reluctantly complicit with this idea that, you know, if you vote R or D, something will change. So why not actually break that machine, that duopoly, that oligarchy, that opposition-controlled opposition, that Hegelian dialectic, and actually go outside of the bounds of the game, break free from the matrix? As Morpheus said, you have the red pill and the blue pill. If you take the blue pill, you will remain asleep and things will look exactly as they do today, but you will be in a prison of your mind. Or you take the red pill and wake up into the messy reality, which is far more exciting than this tepid fantasy world that they pumped into your brain. And you will actually be standing on the shoulders of giants, giants like Thomas Jefferson, the original Paul Bott, or George Washington, the original Gingrich conservative, or James Madison, you know, the original Reaganite, and all of these guys.
Oh.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, that reminds me. This, you know, because I got a busy day, so I got things I have to be doing. But I was had the radio going, and so on one of these channels, I don't know, it's Patriot or Fox Talk, I don't know, one of the ones on Sirius, they have an ad for the Sean Hannity show, which sucks. But the ad, the way they get you in is Ron Paul's talking. So it's, oh, hey, what's Ron Paul saying? But then it turns out it's an ad. And so Sean Hannity is like, are you a Republican or are you a Libertarian, right? Which is kind of interesting because a political party that now has slightly north of 20% support in the country is now calling out people that it thinks is not one of its members and casting people out. This is always a successful strategy for political organizations that seek to increase their ranks. But so Ron Paul gives a thoughtful answer about how the founding fathers were the original libertarians of our nation and all this kind of stuff. So I wanted to recall that because what you're saying absolutely is true. They were, you know, what we today would call libertarians. Back then they would have called themselves liberals, which we now attend to classical liberals, to differentiate them from the fucking communists that call themselves liberals today. But, you know, the interesting thing is Sean Hannity is like, well, you know, you're really, aren't you a libertarian? Get the heck out of here. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is a failed organization. This is a failed organizing principle.
Well, that's the problem with these labels. You know, you don't know what the word means. I mean, if you read something from the 18th century and you see the word liberal in it, it clearly means people like, you know, John Locke and Montesquieu and, you know, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. By today's standards, we wouldn't call any of those guys liberal because today they would be considered staunch, dead, white conservatives. And when we say libertarian, this confuses people so much. So let's take a few moments to talk about that. And by the way, while I give you a diatribe on libertarianism, just remember the number is 646-649-1013. Quit being a pussy and call in, because I know you got something to say, you're typing it somewhere, you're bitching about something. Well, you know what? I'm right here. I'll open up your mic. I'll give you fair time. Come say it. Come on here and say it. Quit being such a sissy and bitching behind my back, behind closed doors, about something
well,
that
that's just gonna
is a First Amendment right. First Amendment right.
If you got something interesting or insightful to say, I mean, if you call in and agree, that's one thing. You know, okay, that's nice. I got validation. But, you know, it's better if you call in and you disagree. You have something different to say, you know. And not one of those, like, shows like Mark Levin where you just yell at you or, like, knock you off the show because we don't like you, you know. We'll actually talk about the thing and, you know, have a debate about, you know, what it is that you have to say. And, you know, I'm not saying necessarily you even have to be civil. Just don't be insane, you know. If you're calling, you know, if you're calling the show and you're talking into your shoe or something, you know, and you know, we probably don't want to hear from you, you know. Or if you're worried about the space aliens or something, you know, I don't necessarily need to hear from you very much. But if you think you have, you know, some kind of intelligent something to say, I mean, say it. And if you think, you know, we're major a-holes and we're the source of everything that's wrong in the country, I mean, call us in and tell us, explain that to us, you know. But be insightful, that's the thing. Be insightful or be funny. Or troll the show, I don't care. I mean, trolling the show is perfectly legit as long as it's a good troll.
Yeah, if you're insightful and you're entertaining and you have a perspective upon the principal stance which you take, we will be happy to discuss it with you. But back to libertarian. This is one of the most oft-confusing words. I'm not even sure where the word came from. It's probably some concoction just because the left, the progressives, the socialists, the collectivists, the communists stole the word liberal, which is a word I actually happen to like because it stems from the word liberality or liberty. It's kind of nice, but they've stolen it, so we lament that. So libertarian. Libertarian can be a big L or a small L. The big L libertarian is for the Libertarian Party, which has their candidate, Governor Gary Johnson of New Mexico, for president on, Chris, what is it, 48 ballots now?
Let me look real quick. Sorry.
Okay, no
problem. I should be able to quote that, but I can't. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, you know, that's the Libertarian Party. Okay. Then there's
Libertarian. 49 and one. I'm sorry. 49 plus one petitioning.
There you go, 49 states and one pending. That's the Libertarian Party. And I strongly suggest that if you are, in fact, a Republican who feels that Mitt Romney is a douchebag and has stolen the nomination and that you do not want to vote for him, that you check out the Libertarian Party. I'm not telling you to vote for Gary Johnson. I'm merely telling you to look at your options because Governor Johnson has done some very conservative things as governor, and he stands for a lot of things with which I disagree. But guess what? If I line it up on a T-chart and do checks and balances against Obama and Mitt Romney, Governor Johnson looks stellar. He looks stellar.
Yeah, and, you know, Rex, one thing that, you know, I want to explain at least about what my strategy is at this point is that, you know, I want to increase the volume for third parties, any third party, in order to deny the major parties a base of support. Now, that includes talking to people on the Democrat side, getting them to vote for Gary Johnson, right? Because just because people vote Democratic doesn't mean that they necessarily are opposed to libertarian views. And then there are, like, crazy, rabid, you know, communist greeniacs out there who, you know, if you're green, you know, you may not know this consciously, but the Green Movement is a cover for the Red Movement because after communism fell in Europe, they all became greens.
Watermelons.
Exactly.
Green on the outside, red on the inside.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
So those people encouraged them to vote for the Green Party. And you know what? What if you could increase the third party support all across the country, you know, to something like 10-20%? No, that's a lot of support that the major parties would, like, holy crap, you know, we're losing our grip on power. Now you approach November 7th in the driver's seat. Yeah, see, we're not putting up with this crap anymore. I got 40% of the country on my side. I'm an independent, you know. Your Republican Party, you're the minority party. You're only two-thirds the size of the Democrat Party. I mean, how pathetic is that? And we're twice the size of you. And you're telling us to go away? Good luck with your failed and dying organization. And then we go and we try to reform it from the inside through 2014, right? And if that fails, and if the rhinos still win, we have empowered the third parties over the next 4 years in order to set up a victory in 2016. Because we got to get off this duopoly thing between the Democrat and the Diet Democrat Party. Or between the Democrat Party and the kiss-ass party that basically is dying.
Yep. I agree 100%. Now, here's the thing with the term libertarian in that paradigm of growing that third-party vote that you talked about, Tex. There are various different types of libertarians, and the two major camps you can split it into if there is such a way to do so, okay? Because the thing about libertarians is they're very much about, you know, do your own thing provided you don't step on my toes. So you get a lot of very divergent views and intentions that are kind of all mixed in the same place. So it's far less monolithic than, say, the Democratic Party, which is full of socialists, or the Republican Party, which apparently is full of rhinos who abuse the conservatives that make up the majority of the actual grassroots. So when you look at libertarians, there's two ways to look at it. There are the social libertarians, and there are the political libertarians. Now, Rex, what the hell are you talking about? Well, social libertarians believe in libertarianism as a praxeological outlook on how you live your life, meaning that you are your own end. Okay, this is quite Rand Roydian after Ayn Rand, who apparently was Paul Ryan's, like, atheistic hero when he was young, which is why he got in government, which I find to be kind of oxymoronic, and I don't buy it, but I digress. They believe that, you know, whatever you want to find in your own happiness is your thing, provided that you do not display any aggression towards anybody else and step on their toes in their pursuit of their own unique quest for happiness. And so anything goes, which means that, you know, if men want to get married or engage in sexual relations, hey, as long as it doesn't affect me, you're free to do it. It's a very quite libertine attitude. And social conservatives, Christians, and traditional Republican conservatives will have somewhat of a problem with that position. But then there's the political libertarians. The political libertarians are not necessarily social libertarians. They don't necessarily think that whatever goes is good for you and you do your own thing and I'm okay and you're okay. They tend to think that there is an objective natural law code for what constitutes human happiness and human flourishing, and that we should engender a society that aspires to those things. And it's kind of the difference between a free society and a free and virtuous society. But that's the social spectrum. The political spectrum, what is a political libertarian? A political libertarian is one who firmly believes in the Constitution. And the Constitution is a binding document on the federal government. It is designed to empower the states, the commonwealths, the counties, the municipalities, the communities, the local parish, the household, the individual. The diffusion of power to the lowest denominator, where you are truly autonomous, sovereign, and free to the extent that you can be when you live with other people. Meaning a man is free in his own home, but as soon as he steps outside of that home and he's in the public domain where others are, there are certain rules of conduct
property.
By which he must, you know, exactly, off his own property. There are certain rules of conduct that we all agree on as the norms for how we get along together, okay? And we have various ceding of certain of our privileges and rights to ever-escalating authorities all the way up to the federal government, but those are very delineated and very limited. So a political libertarian is one who believes that, hey, if you want to have a pro-life Christian nation with a Christian morality, that's fantastic. That's a cultural issue. And the government is not involved in culture. The government is involved in politics. You are involved in culture, and so you are autonomous in your local community to affect the changes that you want. And that's how it goes. So the fact is, if you're an American, if you believe that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, then you are, by virtue of that belief, a political libertarian. That does not mean that you are a libertine or a social libertarian. The prime example of that is Dr. Ron Paul. Dr. Ron Paul is a Republican, or at least, you know, up until Tampa he was. Dr. Ron Paul is a conservative gentleman. He has delivered over 4,000 babies himself. He's quite pro-life. He's been married to the same woman for decades, so he obviously believes that marriage is a firm institution between a man and a woman. He's quite socially conservative. But Ron Paul is possibly the most libertarian politically, more so than Gary Johnson, the nominee of the Libertarian Party, and in some ways possibly even more so than Virgil Good, the nominee of the Constitution Party, because Ron Paul holds the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, not up for negotiation, even in areas where he would like to see it changed, until it is properly changed by Article 5. So when we address politics and someone accuses you of being a libertarian, that's a compliment. It means you love the Constitution. You believe it's the supreme law of the land. Now, in social engagement, if someone accuses you of being a libertarian and you happen to not be one, then you probably find it offensive. I know I would, because I'm not. That is not the way I choose to live my life. I don't believe that it's satisfying. I don't believe it brings happiness. I don't believe it brings flourishing, and I think it's actually a dangerous social ideology. But that is up to us to address culturally in our local communities. It is not up to us to impose our will on others through government, even if we are right, because that's the problem. When you use the power of government to impose your will on others, even if it happens to be right and a good outcome today, you've now created a monster that is likely to abuse you tomorrow. Hence, we are where we are. Did either of you want to chime in on that before I bring in a caller?
No, Rex, let's hear from the caller.
Prohibition.
Okay.
Prohibition. There's your classic example of federal government morality. And what did it cause? biggest crime wave in the history of this country. Then what did that crime wave cause? That caused the federal government to create the FBI. So now you have federal government that can run across all states and police citizens, which basically means state sovereignty was burned to the ground because of a law of people trying to force their morality on people through the federal government.
Would you say, Chris, in that instance, they started the fire and then they sold you the water?
Never let a crisis go
like
to waste.
And when
exactly
they got
like
rid of prohibition, did they get rid of the FBI?
Nope.
No. They did not.
They had all that power now.
Yep.
And do you remember, this actually came out about 2 days ago, that in, I think it was Ohio, there was a Philip Morris truck was attacking a Lucky Strike truck, fighting over turf. You remember all that going on?
I saw that on the Sopranos,
no,
but I didn't
happen.
Know it actually
you know
happened.
Why? It's freaking legal. But you know what? We're in a country that basically is trying to make cigarettes illegal. Why are we doing this? We already know what happens to it. And this gets back to the war on drugs. I mentioned this before. I'm a bit of apostate on this thing. But, you know, you're just financing, you know, Mexican and South American drug gangs. And look at Mexico. Mexico is just a complete shambles, and it's falling apart. And the people there are fleeing. Well, they used to flee here back when we had an economy and jobs. Now they're like, hey, you know, I don't want to go to America anymore. But, you know, we're creating these problems. You know,
oh, sure. And, I mean, you know, the fact is that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah.
That's kind of the balance of political discourse, and we have to weigh that out. And, you know, I probably disagree with both of you on the solution to the so-called drug problem, but I don't disagree that the current war on drugs is an abject failure. But here's the interesting thing. You can't force your will on others, and you can't force other people to comport to your values. Now, there are certain timeless truths embedded in natural law that are quite Christian, but that actually in many ways precede Christianity because they are discernible by human reason, the way God designed it, and the Greeks discovered many of these things even before St. Paul evangelized them. So there are certain things that are just true everywhere for all human societies, and we have to, you know, agree on those, but that doesn't mean you force someone else to do it. Now, for example, a very stark, obvious thing is, you know, murder. No society has condoned murder ever, okay? Now, depends on how you
only
define
governments.
Murder.
Only governments.
Right.
Only governments.
Okay? But in human societies, murder is clearly and intrinsically wrong and an evil. Only criminals engage in the activity. Now, when those criminals happen to get in the government, you end up with genocides and purgings and wars of conquest as opposed to wars of defense and just wars. So it is the collective government, the drones, that does these things. But we all agree that murder in and of itself is wrong. We just disagree on the finer points because killing is sometimes necessary, but what constitutes murder? So that's where we have a discourse and a debate. But you can't force somebody, for example, to say, okay, here's the deal. This is a Christian nation, and if you don't profess Christ as your Lord and Savior, get out. Well, we're not going to do that. And, in fact, people of other faiths find that they flourish in Christian societies because we don't do that. Now, when you tell someone you can't have a drink because I think drinking is wrong, well, that's a problem because that guy might not think drinking is wrong, and, frankly, there's no problem with him having a drink. Oh, well, what about drunk drivers? Ah, see, the problem with drunk drivers is not the drinking. It's the driving. It's the driving. Because a guy could be drunk at home and he won't hurt anybody. Okay, so what's that?
You know what else, Rex?
Sammy,
they've never gotten rid of the stills either. They've never gotten rid of the stills either. They still have them.
Oh, yeah, believe me. I'm from the Commonwealth of Virginia. We are at heart moonshine runners here.
I just want to respond to this thing in chat before it goes away. We have someone called Live Truth Radio, which I don't know, maybe that's ex-Romney Radio, but I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I don't like Romney at all, though, but I state now we need anyone besides Obama in office. Well, here's the problem with that. What if that anyone believes exactly the same thing that Barack Obama does, but he hasn't been found out to be the exact same ideologically, and he's wearing an elephant jersey, and so now you're going to have all the Christian conservatives and all these other people pile into this party defending what this guy does. So Obama's ability to get anything accomplished is now severely limited because he's been found out to be a socialist. And Mitt Romney, who is a socialist because he said he's a progressive. I'm a progressive Republican, which is code for liberal, which is code for socialist, because they realized way back early in the 20s that socialist is not a good thing to be in the United States. And he goes in, and everyone's got their guard down, and he just goes in and acts this stuff. So it's not anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's somebody of principle. It's not any human body you can get in there. You know?
Yeah, let's get off this. Let's get off this anyone.
Janitor? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Use your head.
Let's get off the – yeah, I agree, Tex, 100%. I'm glad you pointed that out because I wasn't paying attention to the chat. Let's get off this anyone or this cult of personality bullshit, and let's start actually focusing on the job, the rules, and the principles, and find somebody who fits that as opposed to trying to make the rules fit the guy that we like. So let's focus up here. But the point I was trying to make regarding prohibition, that I'm going to throw it to Sammy, who just joined us, and then to Tex and you, Chris, is that prohibition was a top-down amendment to the Constitution giving the federal government the power to ban alcohol. Now, whatever you feel about alcohol, this is something that's been around since the dawn of mankind, and for most of our history, that was the only thing you could drink because the water would kill you. So if we didn't have alcohol throughout the ancient world and the Middle Ages, we wouldn't be here today because the water would kill you. So let's not blame alcohol. It's the abuse of alcohol that's the problem. And you can't solve that with the government. So what happened? The states, empowered by the people, wrote an amendment to the Constitution repealing prohibition. And the states sent that to Washington, and Congress had absolutely no ability, according to the Constitution, to refuse to accept that amendment to the Constitution, hence prohibition is no longer the law. But our founding fathers were so wise, they never said that you could delete anything out of the Constitution. So the original Prohibition Act is still there in the properly amended Constitution, but right after it, well, I think an amendment later, is the repeal. And that's so that we don't make the same stupid mistakes we've made in the past. So the states have to be empowered.
For those playing at home, these are very easy to remember because Prohibition is the 18th Amendment, which was the original drinking age, and the repeal of Prohibition was the 21st Amendment, which is the current drinking age. So it makes a little mental jingle-jangle there for the old noggin.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we are joined by a great man who has been fighting hard every night. Maybe he took 3 nights off, but every night this past year, to help get Newt Gingrich elected as the president and the nominee of the Republican Party. He fought for a brokered convention, and now he's sticking to those same principles and fighting for other solutions. We are joined by Sammy Samford. Sammy, how are you?
Hey, Rex. We're doing awesome. Right now, and hey, Dan, hey, Chris, and I'm not
hey,
sure.
Hey, Sammy, glad to have you on.
Sure, who else we have on the line besides
just
Chris?
Just us, Sammy. Just us.
Okay. I mean, right now, people are trying to dictate to us who we have to vote for. And I'm not going to attack anybody. It's not worth the effort. But we have to hold our ground and stand by our values. I am, but right as it stands right now, I am voting for Virgil Goot. And at 99.9% chance, I am going to be voting for him and my whole family here in my household. I'm tired of people dictating that we have to go vote for Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, or otherwise we are traitors to the conservative movement.
Hey, Sammy, guess what I heard today, Sammy? That
you
Rex
probably
and
heard
Tex,
I was a traitor.
Rex, no, Rex and Tex and I have brainwashed you into voting third party. That's what I heard today.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I'm actually voting for Gary Johnson because down here in Texas, Gary Johnson is a name listed on the ballot. He's not a write-in. He's actually on the ballot. So I'm trying to increase the third-party vote, and I figure the most obvious and easiest third-party down here in Texas right now is Johnson. But apparently, I've convinced you, Sammy,
that you're going
to what you're doing. No, no. I see what you're doing there, Tex. I see that Tex is trying to convince us now to change our votes for Johnson. You're insidious, man. No, here's the thing. Tex and I spent a week. We spent a whole week in Tampa with Sammy. And we got to know each other really well, even though I felt like we've known each other forever because we've been talking just about every night for the last year. But we spent a lot of time together. We broke bread together. We drank together. We laughed together. We yelled and probably cussed together. We did a lot of things together. We got to know each other. Let me just tell you something about Sammy Sanford. Nobody tells Sammy what to do. Sammy does what's in his heart and his mind. So this bullshit that somehow we've convinced him to do anything. Look, Sammy and I had a few heated discussions about certain topics on which we disagree. He didn't budge, and neither did I. So the very
simple
fact is, sometimes
Sammy goes swimming at night when you think that's not a good idea for him, but he does it anyway.
He does it anyway, and the triclops emerges. You know, but the fact is that look, we don't have to.
Triclops was really a big monster, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. You know, but the thing is that we can disagree about stuff and we hash things out and we believe in the same principles, and so we discuss things and we look at opposition, we look at all the facts to figure out and draw conclusions. And sometimes we draw the same conclusions and sometimes we don't, but we respect each other. But I can assure you, no one tells Sammy Sanford what to do or how to think. And I'm going to let you comment on what Chris said, Sammy, and then we'll throw it back to Tex and Chris.
Well, I have said from the very beginning of my radio show that I would never vote for Mitt Romney. And have I ever differed from that?
Nope. Not to my knowledge.
I had a moment myself, and I was like, can you not support this guy? I just looked at him, I was like, no, I cannot. No way.
And now Rex, Tex, Robert, and me are being attacked and our names are being smeared, but that's irrelevant. I mean, these people are people that do not really hold to their conservative values. I have never, ever, I did say one time on Chris's page, the coalition page, that I was supporting Gary Johnson. I did that for one reason. That was to bring out the trolls. And I came back on my show the next night and said exactly what I did. Now, supposedly, I had supported Gary Johnson for weeks. I mean, we're barely 32, 33 days past the convention. Who have I been supporting the past two or three weeks? Virgil Goode.
Yep, that's what it sounds like to me, Sammy.
So I guess people really don't listen to my show, and they probably don't listen to yours, and they don't listen to Robert's.
Yeah,
they do listen to Ryan Priebus and Mitt Romney, though, and they'll do anything that they tell them to.
Yeah, and I look, to tell you the truth, I strongly advise you not to listen to Tex and Rex because this is just sheer insanity. I mean, we're talking about crazy, insane stuff like the U.S. Constitution, exercising your God-given rights, voting for duly elected, appointed delegates, having their right to vote, voting for a third party that is legitimately on the ballots. How can you be a traitor for voting for a party that is legitimately on the ballots? When I'm voting because I believe that the party platform and the candidates who are represented actually believe in the oath to uphold and defend the Constitution from enemies foreign and domestic.
Amen.
On the other hand, you got people who are willing to vote for Barack Hussein Obama, an illegitimate and unqualified man to be in the White House, and for Willard Mitt Romney, who both support the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a repeal of our Bill of Rights by executive fiat. So who's the traitor? Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, or are the traitors Virgil Goode, Gary Johnson, and Ron Paul?
Just think about that, because none of those guys want the NDAA. And if you don't know what that is, you'd better look it up. It calls for indefinite detention of suspected troublemakers who are ostensibly Islamic jihadist terrorists or possibly pro-life Christians who pray outside of an abortion clinic or people who support Ron Paul or people who want to end the Federal Reserve or people who read the Constitution and think it's actually the law of the land or people who might actually, oh, I don't know, pray in public in the name of Jesus Christ. Who knows what a troublemaker would be? But the very simple fact is that the Bill of Rights specifically forbids the federal government from denying you of your rights, and the NDAA goes right against that. So if your candidate supports that, who's the traitor?
The traitor is the one that is attacking us. And Dan came on to my show within a matter of a minute or a minute and a half after Newt Gingrich came on the show.
I remember a troll jumped right on.
I have been attacked for saying I disrespected Newt Gingrich.
You did not.
And, I mean, these people are spineless, but we will...
Well, see,
their asses are gone, and I don't give a shit about them anymore. Some of them were friends for 2 or 3 years, but I saw their true colors, and they're coming out and attack me, and their names do not need to be mentioned.
No, that's
we'll
not
leave
true.
That alone.
Yep. They know who they are, Sammy. And
yep.
You know what? I agree with you. Now, let's qualify one statement you just made, because I know you, and I know you didn't mean it the way that it probably came out. It's not that you don't give a shit about them, because I know you're a good Christian man, and you pray for all, especially those who have been your friends, and you want them to do the right thing, and you want them to
their
be good.
Their friendship is what I don't care about anymore.
Yeah, and that's because they violated it. You know, they violated it. Because let's be clear about something. Look, I have friends who are committed liberals. I don't agree with them about anything, but I respect them when they try to make their arguments, which I completely blow out of the water every single time. I have friends who live in other countries who have perhaps a warped view of the United States, but I don't alienate them for it, but I will go toe-to-toe with them. And the thing about you, quote, disrespecting Newt Gingrich, I mean, that's a bunch of bullshit, because let's be clear about something. You were extremely respectful to a man whom you respect. But you disagreed with him. And guess what? Newt Gingrich is not God. Newt Gingrich is not the king. And Sammy had a principled point of conflict and disagreement with a man who he respects, and he respectfully told him that. And Newt Gingrich, who asked respectfully Sammy to reconsider before November his vote for Mitt Romney, or his lack of vote for Mitt Romney, never told Sammy that he has no right to make that decision, never told Sammy he has no right to make that objection, and never told Sammy he has no right to vote for a third legitimate party. He just simply tried to persuade him to do otherwise, and Sammy respectfully told him no. That is a beautiful thing. That is American discourse. That's how it's done. So for those of you who want it to be done any other way, such as you find the man who you like as your candidate and the leadership said, and I'm going to obey him because he's who he is, or, you know, you're a traitor if you do something that's legal and moral but doesn't comport with the current media paradigm.
If you stand up for what you believe and not what the leadership tells you to do, then you're a traitor.
Right.
Screw you.
And
I don't work for the leadership. Who the hell's the leadership? They hanging out at my house? I get a Christmas card from these guys? Who the hell are these people? No, I'm beholden to them. Fuck them. Fuck them. And the other thing is, look, about Newt Gingrich. Hold on. Well, let me say something about Newt Gingrich.
No, go.
Newt Gingrich is what we called in Washington right now, and so is Ron Paul. Sorry to break it to you guys. Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul, they are captured interests, okay? So they believe one thing, but they have to say another thing because they're trying to play the inside game, and they can't say what they actually believe, right? Because they got Ron Paul's son, okay? So that's muscled Ron Paul. And Newt Gingrich is a Republican Party loyalist. He believes in this party. He doesn't think that any third party has any sort of chance whatsoever, and he has to fix it from within, and so he's got to play the game.
okay? So they're captured interest, right? So the words that are coming out of their mouth right now is not exactly what they believe, okay? And we're fools if we allow ourselves to be fooled by the words coming out of their mouth, because at the end of the day, November 7th, we've got to hit the ground running with Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul, and we've got to fix this screwed-up Republican Party, because if we don't, in 2016, it's not going to be around.
Well,
yep.
And here, let me interject this here. Kim asked Newt directly. I think you remember that, Dan, and you probably heard the replay of it, Rex.
No, I heard it live.
And Kim said, would you reconsider about running third party? And what did Newt say? He said if I thought it was viable, he would do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't enough time for to get him to be a third party candidate.
Well, and also,
and,
Sammy, don't forget that there are states
who are
with sore loser laws.
They believe, right? Who are willing to compromise what they believe, and they fall in line behind the party. And they have allowed, what Rex is about to say about sore loser laws, they have allowed their states to enact these types of things. The people should always be able to choose who they want, no matter what. Yes, sometimes it leads to messy primaries. That's good. That's called democracy. Because the people's voice will be heard, but we have empowered our states to silence us. Who the hell's been voting for this stuff? That's what I want to know. Who the hell is voting for this crap?
And Rex and Tex, as y'all know, and Chris, you know the RNC convention hijacked how we appoint delegates in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple.
Circuitous logic that gives all power to the top echelons of control. And when you cheer them for their dastardly deeds, what you are sounding like and calling us who are standing up for what we believe in, traitors, and let's be clear about something. Let's just say that no third party has any chance of getting anywhere, and that if you vote for Good or Johnson or even Stein or write in Ron Paul that you're throwing away your vote, guess what? It's my vote to do whatever I want with. And so
call
me a traitor for exercising my rights as an American and cheering for the dastardly deeds of some political organization that's actually a criminal organization. That's exactly how Adolf Hitler, Lenin, Stalin, Pol Pot, and all those other guys came to power. So think about that for a minute. Just think about that. And the fact is that go ahead, Tex.
They're traitors to their own conscience. That's the worst kind of traitor. You're lying to yourself. I'm not lying to myself. You're lying to you. You know, who's with you there at night when you're going to sleep, when you're lying to yourself, saying, I got to support this guy who I don't really support, who doesn't believe anything that I believe in, and who has people going on TV telling everyone about how bad conservatives are. And you're going to support them. You know what they're
mm-hmm.
going to say? They're going to say, yeah, they sell out every time. That's what these conservatives do. They sell out every time. So you're a traitor to your own conscience.
Well, hey, Dan, Rex and Isabella had a chance to meet my two grandbabies.
Yes,
and that is the reason I am not shutting up. They've got to meet them. They met my whole family except my youngest son, who was at work both times, coming and going. But they have met my family. They've met my grandbabies. And my grandbabies, y'all been seeing, I've been posting pictures of my grandbabies that I'm trying to spend every minute I can with them right now. I am not going to shut up, and I'm not going back down, and these people want to come at you, Tex, Rex, and Robert, and they're coming after me hard and heavy, and they're saying, oh, well, Newt Gingrich is one that propelled your radio show.
Did you pay him to do that, Sammy? Did you pay him to do that, or was that voluntary?
No, I didn't pay him to do that.
That's payola, okay, Sammy, so now you got to sell out. It's like, hey, I just contributed $500 to your campaign, so now I own your campaign. You know? It doesn't work that way. You have principles. You have a conscience. I mean, Newt Gingrich called into Sean Hannity's show. You know, Sean Hannity go out and like, hey, Newt Gingrich is the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know. It doesn't work that way.
Sean Hannity is a cheerleader and quite possibly a moron. And I don't know who listens to him because I tried, you know.
I don't listen to any of those idiots.
I listen to Sirius, you know. There's if anybody has Sirius, you know, I listen to Patriot Radio. There's a guy on there, Will Cal, the Will Cal Majority. For the most part, he's okay. I mean, I think he's not nearly as bright as he could be, but he's okay. But then, you know, you listen to like 2 or 3 minutes of Sean Hannity, and it's like, dude, I could just take a replay of your show from 18 months ago, and you'd be saying the same shit. Come up with something new. Now, I know that Tex and I repeat ourselves a lot because we've got some valid points, but this guy is just a cheerleader for the Republican Party who says I'm a conservative first and a Republican second. Bullshit, okay? Sean Hannity is a mouthpiece for faux news and the Republicans, and if he has any principles, he would, you know, stand up and actually say something. So, I don't
buy it. GD America, Tony Resto, U.S. of KKKA. I mean, seriously, every show. That's we just saw the Sean Hannity show right now in a nutshell. That was it. We're done. Don't need to see it anymore.
You know, it's disgusting. And Sammy, you know, just tell me something, because I know that you and Tex and even Chris, you know, you guys, you know, read stuff and you study what's happened in the past. When did Patrick Henry stand up with indignation and say, you know, give me government-provided security or give me death? When did he say that?
He never did say that.
Yeah, you're right. I'm pretty sure what he said was give me liberty or give me death. Now, that means that he was and he meant it. And so did all of the founding fathers and those who fought in the war for independence from Great Britain. They meant that I will live as a free man or I would rather die. Okay, and it harkens back to, you know, if you're familiar with the movie Braveheart with Mel Gibson, it harkens back to that scene where, you know, Scots were about to go home and William Wallace told them, you can go home and you'll live. But then one day when you're dying and this old man in your bed, and wouldn't you give up all of those days that you had from this day to that to come back here and fight for freedom? And they fought with him, and they bled with him, and eventually they won. So the fact is that, as Tex said earlier, liberty is messy because human beings are fallen, corrupt sinners, and we are inherently selfish, but we try to transcend that by the grace of God, okay? And so when we engage in discourse, debate, trying to order our lives together, it's going to be messy. It's going to be contentious.
It is.
There's going to be arguments.
As hell right now. And they can get messy. And I'm not the one, and you're not the ones. Robert's not the one. Chris is not the one. It's other people making it messy. I mean, Chris is doing an awesome job on his pages and his groups. I mean, Chris, Chris, I don't know how long we've been friends now. What, maybe 2 months or 3 months?
Yeah, it's probably right around, I think I found you guys right around before the convention, right around that area.
Okay. And Chris, I mean, you're awesome. And I love you, brother. And I love Rex and Tex. We spent a week together. And I'm still being accused of using money from my nuke bomb to finance my going to Tampa.
Well, that's just clear. That's such bullshit.
This is what they do. They got nothing else, so they attack you as the person, okay? So I've already been through this, but I was attacked by, you know, real people who are professionals at this, you know, professional political assassins. So at this point, I really don't care what anybody says about me because, you know, the people saying things about me now, they're just complete jokes themselves, you know.
Yeah,
I had the best of the best come after me before, you know. Now it's just all these hacks and rubes and everything, you know. So you can call me whatever you want, you know what, I don't care. Actually, please call me all kinds of things because I love it. It's a source of entertainment for me, you know, because I like to find out who I am. And someday I want to meet the guy that you guys are talking about because he sounds fascinated. But who cares what they say? Just all they got?
Well, you know,
hey, Dan,
let me add. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hold on a second. Hey, Dan, I wish I made all this money off the new money bomb I did for Newt. Because I always told everybody goes to nuke.org.
Well, it's
Sammy,
it's obvious that you hacked into Newt's site, and whenever that money went there, you just, you know, you stole it. I mean, because obviously you're some kind of technical wizard. Maybe you're anonymous. Maybe you're the guy behind all the anonymous hacks. That's how powerful you are. And it's frightening.
Because
I mean, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You always said Newt.org. How did you get any of that money?
Sammy, you self-finance this thing. You build an audience based on your own personality and what you had to say, and from that you spawned other shows. So you spawned a following, and now, oh, yeah, but you only did it because you're on the take, right? It's nonsense. It's complete nonsense. They have nothing else to go after, and so they're trying character assassination. And, you know, I don't want to raise necessarily, you know, things that, you know, are, well, I'm just going to steer clear of that. But to try character assassination on someone like Sammy, you know, I really think at this point you have crossed a major red line in your life, in your moral life, in your moral existence, and something that someday perhaps you will have to answer for. And, you know, if you don't believe in an afterlife, maybe you believe in karma and reincarnation or something like that, or maybe you believe you're just going to go away, rot, and die. But you know what?
Yeah.
You are some sick, sick people out there. If this is how you think you're going to attain victory, or if this is how you think you're going to support Mitt Romney, because this isn't supporting anybody. This is only discrediting you. And you are only
continues to destroy the party. It's destroying the brand, what's left of it.
Yep.
Well, you know,
people like this.
I just want to point something out, because we alluded to this earlier, and so I went and I double-checked while we were on the phone. How many people in this country identify or self-describe themselves as liberals? It's a very small number, but how many?
15, 20% maybe.
Okay. Well, I just looked on Gallup. It's actually 21%. You know how many people identify themselves as registered Republicans? 21%. Ouch. Ouch. You know how Republicans are always on about, oh, yeah, liberals, it's a real small part. Yeah, they're the same size as the liberals, the Republicans. The independents, we're 40%. Why are we playing these guys' game? Why are we pretending this thing's real? This isn't a party. It's a joke. Now, oh, we got to fall in. We got to support the party. Why? Because they descend on you like harpies? And they destroy you if you don't. The Republican Party are the liberals. They got the same, essentially, size of support. And you know what? They're not playing my tune. I'm not hearing my tune. And so you know what? I'm not going to support somebody who doesn't play my tune anymore. I'm done. This country is in serious freaking trouble. And it's up to us as citizens to fix it. And if we don't, we're done.
Yep.
So
thanks.
I don't care about it anymore.
Yep. Tex, we're down to the last 12 minutes of the show, and I think that Chris wanted to chime in on some of the conversation we've been having, and then I'm going to throw it to Sammy because he probably has to run get some dinner before he does his show.
No, I'm getting ready to bow out now. And you're having an awesome show, and we are not backing down. We are not shutting up, and we got to get ready for Robert's show.
Sounds good, Samuel. Thanks for calling in, and we'll see you over on Bard's Logic Political Talk from 9 to 11, and then we'll catch up with you again on Conservatives Unite at 11 o'clock. Right, Sammy?
Amen. God bless you, and I love you three brothers.
All right, buddy.
Dan.
Thank you, Sammy. Thanks for calling in.
Tex and Rex. Y'all are awesome patriots. We are not shutting up. Good night.
Night. See you soon, Sammy. Chris, I know you were trying to get something in there, so I'm going to throw the floor to you before we go into the final wrap-up.
Well, I just want to throw a couple things out that I find amazing, because I actually was on Virgil Goode's presidential site today, Facebook site, and there was a gentleman that had gone on there and put a guy I know, I have known, you know, through the primary, and put a little link on there to his group, his Tea Party group, saying that, oh, hey, we all got something in common, and you should come over to our group and be part of us, too. Well, I went over there, and guess who was on the group? All the people that have been attacking us. Mm. And so I had something to say about that, and I asked him. I said, you want Virgil Goode supporters to come over to a Tea Party group that supports Romney and attacks other people? And he goes, no, I do research on Tea Party groups and this and that and the other, or third-party groups and stuff like that. And I go, you know, I cannot believe that, because a lot of these people on your group are people I've had to boot because they attacked me on my own group when we were trying to do third-party research. You know, I'm just like, it's just amazing to me that people that I thought were like us, you know, conservatives, rule of law, some form of ethics. Not, you know, I'm not perfect, don't get me wrong. But, you know, that believe in something are becoming sinister. The same thing that was shocking to me that I faced with the primary, you know, with the attacks that came from the Romney people, they're becoming those people. And I guess that I don't know if I've really settled with that yet. Have you guys? I mean, do you just kind of like, wow, you know, it's just amazing to me. But, you know, at the end of the day, when Romney loses in November, which it looks like he will, and who cares about, you know, 43-45% national polls, and I said this multiple times, you do not win an election nationally. It's state by state, and he's losing his tail. So when he loses in November, and all these people who turn to the dark side, what are they going to do with their lives at that point? As the party loses another 5-7%, and they've abused all the people like us who were trying to open the door and remain conservatives and remain constitutionalists and bring them along on that journey, you know, that journey of research, and let's go find out things together, and let's continue to be what we say we are. You know, when you make that transition, I mean, how do you come back? I mean, can you?
Well, they're gonna blame us for their loss.
You know,
that's what's going to happen. And that's what they're
all
already
five,
doing.
All
you know,
five
right?
of us, us five.
Yeah, right
like,
now they're blaming us for voting
for
any of the third parties, and that's what's causing Romney to lose. I hate to break it to you, but what's causing Romney to lose
is
the fact that Romney sucks. And, you know, Chris Christie, that other Northeast liberal douchebag, is out there saying, well, you know, it's Romney's going to restart his campaign with the debates. How many fucking times is this guy going to restart his shitty campaign? You know, Paul Ryan was supposed to put him over the top, and the convention was supposed to give him a bump, and the foreign policy mess that Obama created was supposed to give him a bump. How many times are you going to restart the campaign? Every time he restarts the damn thing, he gets worse and
it
falls
down.
Farther back.
Yeah.
This is Romney.
Are you
going to
tell about that show tomorrow?
I mean, what is he, a cat? How many political lives does this man have? He's dead. He's dead. You're beating a dead horse. It's over. Give the man a break. I mean, for no other reason, please give Ann Romney a break. Think of Ann Romney and what she's going through with
her
poor husband.
Tex, did you just call Romney a pussy?
I think I may have implied that.
Okay.
Hey, can I do a real quick thing for tomorrow's show?
Yeah, please do. We've got 7 minutes left, so tear it up.
Okay, on I'll do it really fast. On Robert's show tomorrow night, 9 p.m., the links will be on the group and around. Arlene always does a great job there. But we're going to have a U.S. Senator and a U.S. House of Rep interview tomorrow. So that'll be really cool. You know, real constitutionalist. And the guy, the senator, was 20 years in the Navy, and 20-plus years in the defense industry. So he's got big insights to national defense and foreign, all the stuff going on, military, blah, blah, blah. And the other guy is a medical doctor. So he's got big insights to Obamacare and healthcare solutions. So tomorrow's night's show has got some really great people on it. I'm done.
Well, that sounds exciting, Chris. And can you give us the full name and maybe post the link to that show in the chat?
Yeah, I'll post the link right now. Sorry, I got chemicals on my hand. I'm cleaning my racket.
Fair enough. Well, the show that Chris is referring to is Bard's Logic Political Talk. It is one of the shows that are conspiring together to cause Romney's failure, and we've brainwashed Sammy, and we've also apparently gotten into Robert Jetter's head, who is a mild-mannered gentleman from Ohio, and we've got him cussing up a storm now. So, you know, our plan, our diabolical plan is working, and we are corrupting everybody. So please tune in to Bard's Logic Political Talk at 9 p.m. Tomorrow.
I just want to say that Mitt Romney is perfectly capable of losing this thing on his own. He's doing a great job as it is. When he loses on November 6th, don't blame me. His candidacy was dead when I got here, right? I showed up on the radio to try to tell you guys how we could fix it with the brokered convention. And we got that brokered convention, and they put the kibosh on that because the Republican Party doesn't want to win anymore, right? They want to be the Democrat light party. And so don't blame me for this thing, but it's over with him. It's just done. So the thing is, what are you going to do? Are you going to prove to be like, oh, I was a party loyalist, you're one guy in that voting group? Are you going to vote for this crap? Or are you going to send a message to the party that, hey, fuckheads, quit fucking up, all right? I'm tired of this shit. I'm tired of every solution to all of your political problems being vote for a rhino. Voting for the rhino doesn't exist. There is no political G-spot between the Democrat and the Republican Party. All the independents are way to the fucking right of you. They are back at the Constitution, and you're somehow trying to slice the deal between Eugene Debs and fucking Karl Marx. And that's why you're failing. That's why the Republican Party basically now has the same level of support as liberals. You're done. Quit supporting these guys, because they're going to do it to you again and over and over and over again until you straighten your back and you start standing up for what you actually believe in.
And I got to say something about that, about his campaign being dead. Didn't John McCain kill Romney's campaign in 2007? I'm just saying.
Well, see, this is the victory strategy of the Republican Party, which is that we always run the guy who's next in line because he's the guy who lost last time. So we always run the previous loser. See, this guy who sucks to the guy who lost last time, so we're going to run that guy because now it's his turn. How does this shit work? How would that ever be successful in any military? You know, like, hey, remember that tank that totally got its ass blown apart by this freaking tank? Well, then we sent that one tank, the victory tank in a battle, and it got blown all the shit. Yeah, well, it turns out, fuck that tank. Okay, so we rebuilt that previous piece of shit tank, and now we're running that into battle, right? Oh, shit,
yeah.
That thing got blown up. Now we got the secondary piece of shit tank that got blown up the first. Now we're running that into battle. I mean, what is this, political regression?
You got a guy,
a turtle shell with, you know, a freaking bone in his hand calling himself a tank. You know?
Yeah.
This is suicide. This is stupid. Fuck you, Karl Rove. That's what I'm saying.
Fantastic.
Reverse
devolution,
guys.
Yeah, exactly. Devolution. We've got 3 minutes left. I just want to point out a couple of other things. Liberty requires competition. Okay, so all of those who are accusing us of being some kind of monolithic destructive force to the Republican Party. Republican Party shot itself in the foot by quieting the voices of liberty. And you know Tex and Rex are broadcasting tomorrow from 7 to 9, so please join us back here, 7 to 9. Follow the show on Blog Talk Radio. But I am such a good marketer that I'm actually going to send you somewhere else, because at the same time, 7 to 8 tomorrow, there is a show on Blog Talk Radio called Constitutional Perspective, hosted by Joshua Fauber, and I strongly recommend you check it out, because the voices of liberty are a multiplicity of voices, and we encourage all to be heard so that we can be the best. Now, I'm going to quote who I think was one of the greatest cheerleaders for our constitutional republic, and I'm going to throw it to Chris, and then Tex and I are going to close. But just keep this in mind. The absence of a constitution, men will look entirely to party instead of principled governing, party will govern. So when party governs principle, then you lose the principles of the party. That's from Thomas Paine, which means that the principles which the Republicans allege to stand for, they are now firmly standing against. And because they have done that, it is time to let them go. We've actually only got 1 minute left. So, Chris, anything on your mind?
No, I was just thinking when you said that, the party, I was thinking of the Socialist Party, the Politburo.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Okay. Well, thanks, Chris. Tex, you want to wrap it up in 30 seconds?
Yeah. I'd like to end on a high note, but, you know, look, the thing is the Republican Party has gone down in flames on November 6th, and we're just going to have to deal with that. But what I want to say is that right now everybody's acting all crazy and calling people names if they don't support this failed candidacy. Come November 7th, we'll all circle back and we'll have a meeting. And we'll be like, yeah, see what I was saying? And we can fix this thing. But right now, this is the stupid season.
Yeah, the stupid season. That's a good one. Well, here's the way that I see it, okay? There are basically two major camps and then a plethora of spectrum in between, but the two major camps are the forces who stand up for liberty and freedom and those that stand against it. And if you are against freedom, I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a left-handed cross-dressing lesbian, or a Christian preacher, if you stand against liberty, then you are the enemy. And you know what we do to enemies?
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good.
That is good.
This is Tex and Rex, signing off.